And right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Fred Clarkson, Senior Fellow for Religious Liberty with Political Research Associates. Fred is author of the book Eternal Hostility, The Struggle Between Theocracy and Democracy. Fred is also the author of a recent report titled When Exemption is the Rule, The Religious Freedom Strategy of the Christian Right. Fred, great to have you on the program again. Thanks for making time for us.
Oh, great to be back.
So just to start out, we've just had a report from the floor of the Democratic Party Convention, and of course there's a lot of controversy swirling around the fact that WikiLeaks exposed some internal communication of the Democratic National Committee on discussion of how to sabotage the Bernie Sanders campaign, an accusation that was long made by Bernie Sanders supporters. A lot of controversy there in Philadelphia tonight, and a lot of uncertainty about party unity. But this evening we're going to focus more on the Republican Party convention just concluded in Cleveland, Ohio, and focusing on the party platform and the influence of the Christian right that you focus on. And I'll start off with this proposition, and that is, with a GOP nomination of Donald Trump, the question of a changing Republican Party is in the air. And although Trump is using the tried and true campaign tactics of divide and conquer with his appeals to racism and anti-immigrant sentiment, Trump has also challenged some Republican Party orthodoxies, including its interventionist foreign policy, support for NATO, and pro-free trade policies. And it seems that Trump, who is not a Christian evangelical himself, has only offered the Christian right rhetorical, not deeply held support. But when it comes to the party platform, as you'll discuss in more detail, Fred, the party platform is firmly in the corner of the Christian right, as it has been for many years on the Republican side of one of our two major political parties. What's your view of Trump's relationship with the very long time and important Republican Party ally, the Christian right?
Well, it's complicated, to be sure. As you said in the run-up to this, Trump has rearranged party politics in terms of who he is and the kind of politics he represents and the way he campaigns. And the Christian right has never seen anything like him any more than anybody else. But that said, his relationship with some surprising conservative Christian leaders goes back not just 6 months or a year, but from what my colleagues and I can track, 4 or 5 years. And they were already talking about Trump running for president in at least 2011 that we can find. So he's been building a base of support among people who were not ordinarily reached out to. And this has upset the Washington establishment, if we can call them that, conservative Christian leaders who are accustomed to being power brokers. So there's been sort of an insurgency within the Christian right, within the Republican Party, that explains at least some of his evangelical support. But that said, despite his record as a pro-choice Democrat and a pro-choice Republican who was in favor of LGBTQ rights, he's now at least giving lip service to those things in such a way it provides sufficient cover for conservative Christians to support his candidacy. So it's you could say that they're election year conversions, and he hasn't handled it well, but he's being treated with seriousness on that.
And what about the party platform? Maybe, Fred, you can review for us what is in the Republican Party platform this year that maybe is significant in its consistency with Republicans in years past, or any differences that you know?
Well, I can't say I've looked at every detail of the platform, particularly in the area of trade and foreign policy, but my guess is that they're pretty much the same because Trump kind of kept hands off of that stuff as far as I read. I think that the language around abortion and homosexuality is less strident, even though it's clear about where they stand. And I think, too, that one thing that does stand out that's different to me, and anybody who goes and looks at it can look at the very beginning, and that's that they are making a deeper appeal to what we call Christian nationalism than perhaps we've ever seen before. And this is the idea that America was founded as a Christian nation and somehow got derailed by some deep conspiracy of liberals and the ACLU and the Supreme Court and the other usual suspects, and must be restored once again to that idea of Christian nationalist greatness. And the way you can see it, where the code words are at the beginning, is a clever invocation of the Declaration of Independence, and claiming that there are specifically Christian religious principles embedded within it that were the principles that then led to the writing of the Constitution. Now, the Constitution is very clear about the nature of religion and government, and that is that Article 6 says there'll be no religious test for public office. And the Christian right historians who are honest about these things said, yeah, that was a clear break, you know, with the any idea of Christian nationalism or the any idea of biblical theocracy. But it's an inconvenient thing if you're the contemporary Christian right. You, in order to say that America was founded as a Christian nation, somehow you have to find a religious justification in the Constitution and the intention of the framers, which just isn't there. So the way that they do it is to try to shoehorn in some of the religious language of the Revolutionary Manifesto that we call the Declaration into the intended meaning of the Constitution. That is present in the Republican Party platform. It's been a propaganda theme of the Christian right for many years, and it's a real, you might not notice it unless you're familiar with that stuff, but it's shocking to me that it's present, because it's an appeal to a kind of Christian theocracy in dog whistle terms.
And Fred, what's the outlook for the Christian right in terms of demographic changes the country is going through? I know there are fewer and fewer people, you know, particularly young people, the millennial generation, that are drawn to practicing conservative religious doctrine. And that the appeal of the Christian right seems to be fading if you look to the future. What's your view? I know you've studied this, and maybe I'm on the wrong track, but are the Republicans headed for trouble as they continue to push these social issues appealing to the most conservative religious elements in the country?
Well, I think they've all kind of moderated their tone on homosexuality. And we certainly heard that at the Republican convention. And specific invocation of LGBTQ rights on the part of several speakers and the first openly gay Republican to speak at a conference. So they're aware of those kinds of concerns and are trying to find ways of addressing them without losing the base of traditional conservative Christian support. So they're walking a line there. On abortion, you're not going to see any wiggle room. You're not going to see any. You may not see them emphasizing it as an issue, but it's not going to change. So the issue then becomes, for them, in terms of the demographic issues that you're speaking of, can they build sufficient support within conservative ethnic communities of color? And I think they are already making strong inroads, and that they are not now, nor have they ever been, as entirely reliant on white Christianity as you'll sometimes see in the press. But that said, the secret, the dirty secret, if you will, of American politics and the demographic trends we're talking about is that America, United States, has the lowest level of participation, participation of potentially eligible voters of any of the industrial democracies. And the trick for both parties has been, how do you manipulate the demographics as they are in terms of people who are registered and prepared to participate in politics to your advantage? Now, the Republicans have done that in a smashingly historically successful form, because they control both the House and the Senate, and historic numbers of state legislative seats all over the country. And they've been able to control the redistricting process in the states following every 10-year census for decades. And they're in the strongest position now that they've ever been in American history. So while the Democrats speak optimistically about the increasing numbers of black and Latino voters, in fact, as a proportion of the electorate, that isn't happening. And even to the extent that it is, the way that redistricting is gerrymandered, the white conservative Republicans are able to steer the process to their advantage because they control the levers of power.
We're speaking with Fred Clarkson here this evening on Counterpoint. He's Senior Fellow for Religious Liberty with Political Research Associates. He's the author of the book Eternal Hostility, The Struggle Between Theocracy and Democracy. Fred, I would imagine the issue of abortion is as powerful in the Republican Party as it has been for many, many years. What is the current position of Donald Trump and those controlling the Republican Party? I know one significant thing he was asked during a media interview about abortion was a statement that he made during the interview that where he said that he thought women should be punished.
I saw that interview.
If they have an abortion. Maybe you can give us a bigger picture on the Republicans and Trump on the issue of abortion.
Well, Trump has tried to present himself as pro-life, and he says that's his current position. And it may be. With politicians and these sorts of things, you kind of never know. Many people have election year conversions in both directions. But Trump has been clear through this process, and yes, he did think that women who had abortions and doctors should be punished. He kind of walked that back a little bit, but I saw that interview, and he spoke spontaneously, and it suggested authenticity to me. But with that said, he has also strongly defended Planned Parenthood. He doesn't believe that Planned Parenthood should be attacked and state funding withdrawn from Planned Parenthood providing services for contraception and other women's health services that Planned Parenthood does provide. He doesn't think there should be government funding for abortions, but he has really been very clear on the issue of Planned Parenthood funding, probably much to the frustration of many of his Republican colleagues. So exactly where the Republican Party ends up in the era of Trump is not clear, because demographic trends tend to support conservative Christians being even more pro-life than their parents. And that's been true for a long time and remains unchanged. But I think that Trump is interested in broadening, having a bigger tent, as politicians sometimes like to say. So he's trying to have it both ways, and he's walking a new and different kind of line around the issues of reproductive choice than we've ever seen a politician take.
And hard to fathom moment to moment, isn't it?
Yes. Hard to interpret if you're somebody like me, too.
You know, I wanted to ask you about the Democratic Party presumptive nominee Hillary Clinton's pick of her vice presidential running mate, and that is U.S. Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia, former governor. He walks a fine line, too, in terms of some of the positions he's taken on abortion. And I'm wondering if you would interpret for us a bit of the nuance that Senator Tim Kaine has walked, both as governor of Virginia and senator.
Well, I'm not sure I followed all the details of his career on that point. You may be more knowledgeable than I, but I would say, broadly speaking, Democrats are currently bragging that he has 100% rating in terms of his voting record with Planned Parenthood. But that said, he is anti-abortion. I think he's taking the view now that he is he's pro-life in sort of the Mario Cuomo sense of the term. Many liberal Catholics who remain pro-life but are ostensibly pro-choice because they don't want to interfere with the rights of others. So I think that that's the line he's trying to walk now. It's a smart line for a Catholic politician to take, but it's also one that is not going to go over well with the Catholic bishops.
So in the end, maybe it's a wash. I'm not sure if, you know, he
electorally wins. Electorally speaking, maybe.
Yeah.
But when you consider that there are pro-life Democrats, like Bob Casey from Pennsylvania, who spoke this evening at the convention. He's from Pennsylvania. Now, he takes a more aggressive position than Tim Kaine, but he also doesn't make a big deal out of it, given that he's in a pro-choice Democratic caucus. So if Bob Casey is supportive of the ticket, that's going to bring along a lot of Bob Casey-type Democrats.
Fred, I wanted to talk about your recent report that focused on the Christian rights efforts to carve out exemptions, as you put it, to evade civil rights and labor laws in this country. They certainly have, attempted to say that their religious liberty is being violated if they're forced to uphold certain laws, certain anti-discrimination laws.
Yes.
Maybe you could describe what is being attempted here by elements of the Christian right.
Well, there are a number of different things. I mean, one is, as you're referring to, the classic case of since marriage equality is now the law of the land and had been in a number of states before it was, the Supreme Court ruled on it, there are many conservative Christians, both Catholic and evangelical, who feel that as a matter of their day-to-day business activities, as florists or bakers or anyone else, don't want to be complicit in gay marriage because their faith opposes marriage equality and homosexuality in general, but marriage in particular. So they don't want to bake a cake for a gay couple who are seeking to get married. Now, that kind of idea is similar to the kind of laws that we had in the Jim Crow era when, as a matter of business practice, restaurants or barbershops or whatever could decline service to black people because they didn't want to have to. Or in the case of various state laws or various institutions like colleges, to ban interracial dating or interracial marriage. Now, those laws are considered abhorrent and have gone by the boards and don't exist in the United States anymore. But now we have a new kind of double standard where, based on the invocation of religious faith, you can deny the normal business activities of others. So that's the classic case right now, but it's certainly not the only one.
And, Fred, I wanted to maybe discuss what your view is on the overall strength of the Christian right in this country as it confronts popular opinion. Public opinion is often opposed to the Christian right agenda, but certainly they've had a lot of success with influencing Republicans in Congress and their agenda on abortion and gay rights for some time now. But they've been losing in the Supreme Court, and certainly losing in some of those issues with public opinion overall.
Well, that's certainly true, and I think they've seen the writing on the wall with regard to the Supreme Court for a long time, and that the Constitution and the history of federal case law and the dilution of religious principles at the federal level doesn't bode well for their agenda, and they know that. They knew that they were going to lose on marriage equality, for example, and they're pretty damn sure that abortion rights are forever. So their focus has been on the states, where they can exert more leverage electorally and in terms of funding. So the kinds of issues that we've seen even recently come before the court on issues of over-regulation of abortion clinics in order to deny people access to services has been a tactic that's gone on for two decades, very successfully, driving abortion providers out of business, making it too expensive or too difficult. But I think the key thing and the key to that strategy is, as I was referring to before, the sheer electoral power of the Christian right in many states, not all, but in many states within the Republican Party and even extending in the Democratic Party. They are the best organized faction in American public life and are likely to be for the foreseeable future. And I would even go so far as to say they are one of the most dynamic, best organized, and powerful religious political movements in American history. And I don't say that to be hyperbolic. I say that it's easy from the comfort of New England to not recognize that the Christian right is a very powerful force almost everywhere south of us.
Well, Fred, is there any disillusionment? Is there any disillusionment among the Christian right about the Republican Party? That I know there has been the expression of some upset and anger from many sectors of the Christian right. They feel that the Republicans exploit them, that they are well organized. They do turn out their voters, but at the end of the day, there's some thought that the Republicans, you know, don't go to the mat on their conservative social issues as much as they could, fearing that they might alienate, you know, sort of independent voters out there that are not down the line in agreement with the Christian right agenda.
Well, sure. There have always been hardcores in that regard. And many on the Christian right have felt, and I've heard them speak to this going back two decades, on exactly the point you make, that they help to elect politicians, and once they get to Washington, they don't work as hard for them as was thought. And it's true of presidents and senators and what have you. So they've come to recognize that they're, let's say, to temper their expectations of electoral politics as at the national level as a vehicle for their agenda. There's not going to be any instant theocracy. There's no political savior that's going to change the abortion laws in the United States or stop marriage equality or the general advance of LGBT equality. They recognize that. So tempering their expectations comes with a certain bitterness, but a certain realism, too. So adjusting themselves accordingly is where it is. Now, I think that the interesting thing that we saw in vivid display in the Republican convention was the rise of Ted Cruz, who was born to be the Christian right leader that he is. His father raised him with certain ideas. He was surrounded by people who said that he was divinely anointed to play the role that he is playing now. He went to Princeton and Harvard and excelled in the bastion of the enemy. And he understood that that's what he was doing while he was there. So he would understand the world of liberal academia and mainstream politics and culture and still do better than everybody else. And he's taken that attitude and that vision to his role in the Senate, where his colleagues uniformly hate him, and to the national stage as a freshman senator. And he stood at the Republican National Convention and refused to endorse their presidential candidate in what was taken as a display of hubris and political suicide, but it was actually an extraordinarily brave thing to do, where whatever, he's the kind of guy who they're looking for, the guy who will stand up for his principles regardless of the seeming consequences, who doesn't have, he's not a finger to the wind politician. And because that's so, whatever any of the rest of us may think about Ted Cruz, there are a lot of people who love him for that.
Well, we're just about out of time, Fred. One quick response to a question here as we close out. What is the threat that you see in the Christian right for our democratic system in the United States? I know that could be a conversation that can run hours, but what, you know, putting it in a short, simple, declarative statement, what is the threat you see?
The Christian right is skilled, better skilled than any other faction, to use the democratic processes and the offices and the skill sets that go with them to advance their agenda in order to end democratic processes as we know them and to advance a more theocratic society.
Well said. Thank you so much, Fred. What's the website our listeners can go to follow your writing, Political Research Associates, and the other blog that you run?
Politicalresearch.org is the best place to find me these days. Still involved with the group blog Talk to Action, and that's talk2action.org.
All right. Well, as always, thanks so much for your important work and sharing that with us this evening, Fred. Appreciate it, and we'll certainly stay in touch through this election season.
Okay. Anytime, Scott.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
That's Fred Clarkson, Senior Fellow for Religious Liberty with the group Political Research Associates.